For March the 6th, 2015, we talk about Valve's GDC announcements, a whole bevy of older games, and we ask you which lost or ignored gaming gems you wish would come back. Welcome to the 96th level. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meismith.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Guys, I don't have any banter for the beginning. Nothing cropped up, nothing new, nothing happening. GDC is going on, but none of us are close to that.
I guess this is a brief here. I was going to ask, I haven't seen anything earth-shattering from GDC.
I've got something good that's my brief.
I've got something okay that's my brief.
Yeah,
I've got something that's my brief.
I'm furiously Googling.
I got something for you right here. Yeah, we're not part of that. We're not in that world. But it's also early in the week. We're recording this, you know, on Tuesday, and this episode comes out on Friday. So, you know, if Screech comes out and says, you know, he's got a magnum opus that's going to make audiences weep in video game form as some kind of cross between Grand Theft Auto and Dear Esther, then you know, I'm sorry that Screech scooped us. That's not the way time works.
Sandbox weeping.
Although we may have to do some kind of extra edition or insert an evening edition, if you will.
It's a choose your own disaster game.
Isn't that just SimCity?
What?
I'm sorry, I'm not aware of the SimCity game you're speaking of.
Choose your own emotional disaster.
choose your own catastrophe. Yeah. But we've got kind of a longer episode. I feel like kind of brewing up, so I don't want to burn too much of our time right here. So why don't we jump into? How about this? How are you guys doing?
Doing good.
What do you think the expression "burning a candle at both ends" means? Does it mean like you're doing something too quickly, or what do you think?
Got too much going on.
It means you have really weird candle holders. It's supposed to be an I or a lowercase l, not an uppercase t. I don't know, burn it like you're just you're overcommitting. Most candles burn at one end, but you're burning it too.
All right, okay.
Yeah, right, I'm gonna burn the candle twice as fast.
Right. It meets in the middle. It's like a more tragic version of Lady and the Tramp.
So when it meets in the middle, which flame goes out first?
I think they become one.
To become one.
Extreme effort without time to rest. The phrase, which originally came from the French expression, came to mean working so hard that you burn yourself out.
Can you burn the midnight oil while you burn the candle at both ends?
I think they can be in the same room, but they can't be similar scents. They have to complement. And I think you have to get some kind of feng shui expert in to consult. Otherwise, you're going to fuck your shit up right.
Got it.
Yeah.
Did you just like roll a U?
Yep. how do you pronounce feng shui? It's unpronounceable.
Next level junk. Do feng shui and you're just referencing the role playing system.
What? Shui?
Yeah, apparently there's I'm listening to a podcast right now that is doing a role play using the feng shui system, which is centered around like action movies and stuff.
So there's a glass of water and a mirror and a couple of Uzis. Yeah.
And a couple six-headed die.
A well-placed
right,
burn.
But you have to place the Uzis right at the right position so as not to, you know, throw off your feng shui.
Yes, pointed at your enemy.
Like I said, pointing them at yourself would definitely throw off your feng shui.
Yeah. I'm sorry, can you say that again?
Huh? Say what?
So you said a word there, feng something.
Oh, feng shui?
Oh, yeah. I like a better way than I do.
I cannot roll R's for U's or...
I'm on enough of a roll for both of us. So...
Cool. So they've been pronouncing it feng shui in the podcast that I'm listening to, but I just looked it up and it's not spelled any different than the regular feng shui. Maybe the people in the podcast just have it wrong.
Maybe they're making some kind of goof on Hong Kong fooey.
Maybe.
But feng shui is the actual way to pronounce it, right?
Is it?
I'm sorry, what?
Yeah, you're saying.
I just kind of want everyone to have a different pronunciation of it.
Okay. Let's pick this to be our feud for the next 25 episode. Smash Bros. Or Smash Brothers, doesn't matter. It's out. Dennis, I'm going to need you to drop another poll. Let's make this happen.
Yeah. How do you mispronounce function?
But it's going to be all in text.
It's the same thing spelled.
Hey, they have phonetic alphabets.
Sure.
Now we're back on the Wikipedia thing for the free roll. So we've got the usual kind of nonsense for you. We've got the brief, the multiplayer, and the grind. Let's hit it. Guys, do you mind if I go first in this section of the grind? Or sorry, the brief, where we talk about video game news?
Yeah. Yeah,
it depends on what your topic is about.
Well, I mean, there's no way to know until I do it. I mean, there could be a way for us to like find some kind of shared document and get together ahead of time, but but no, that's ridiculous.
That's laughable.
Why would we do that? So Valve is making kind of a big splash at GDC this year.
Damn
last week
swooped.
We a multi swoop. Yeah. You guys knew I was going to pick this because I'm excited about it. So we talked last week about their VR solution that they're doing with solution. God, fuck me. Their VR headset that they're working on with HTC. But I'm excited about this thing that was announced like right before we started recording. So Valve is putting out two pieces of hardware this November, the first of which is the one that we've kind of come to expect and, you know, have waited for. At least I have been waiting for it for the past 3 years now, something like that. The Steam controller is coming out at a cool $50, $49.99. And so I don't know if that's going to be wired or wireless, but I'm still excited about it. Kind of the dark horse on this is something I didn't expect them to put out, but I knew kind of they were accounting for, which is a little tiny box akin to a Apple TV or an Amazon Fire TV called the Steam Link, which is a little piece of device, a little piece of kit that is meant to stream video over your home network onto a TV. So if you have a computer in your office and you want to play some sweet, sweet Steam games on your TV in your living room without putting your PC next to your TV, then this is going to be the thing that you want to plug in. It'll do 1080p at 60 hertz. With quote low latency, I'll believe it when I see it. And it's got USB ports and HDMI and network cables and all that. Again, for like a tidy $50, which is much lower than I expected those to be.
So the big question is, how did they misspell link? Because it's not technology unless you misspell the word slightly.
No, it's spelled like the fairy guy who rescues Zelda.
L-I-N-K.
It's actually L-Y-N-X. You actually get a giant cat.
Yeah. Yep. It's the Atari Lynx. It has a battery life of 3 hours, but it has a color screen, and it plays a pretty passable version of Aliens versus Predator.
And it has a murder setting.
a murder setting?
Yeah, like a lynx.
Okay.
It'll eat a human.
Yeah. Sorry. It's a localization thing. I called it hungry. It's hungry setting. Unlike the Dreamcast, which has a it's thinking setting.
So you're sure it's not like L-Y-N-N-C-K-S?
It's L-I-N.K.
Ah, there it is.
Easily confused with a song on an Aphex Twin album. Yes or no?
No. It is actually a word. So, yeah. I'm kind of jazzed about this. Like, I'm willing to throw $50 at something that may or may not work. Because
twice.
Twice. for the controller and the link. I don't know. Yeah. Maybe I'll see what the reviews shake down on. But I think this is a great idea.
Right.
See, I feel like I need a Steam like anti link, or like I need to reverse the polarity or something. If I could get something where I could have my PlayStation play over my computer, that would be awesome.
Yeah, that.
Yeah.
And we talked about that last time. That seems like a very. I don't see the use case for that, because if you have it on a TV. However, I think what you might want is a PS Vita, David. Actually, now that I think about it. Because
it's rather possible.
Yeah, because that does that thing that you want, except it's not on your laptop, it's on a, you know, PlayStation.
Now hold on, Cole. As the only Vita owner in the bunch, I think I should be the one to determine who really needs that technology.
Well, Dennis A, I'm sorry to this is not a brief. I'm sorry to disappoint you, but I hope you have room on that boat for one more. Also, ooh, this is not a surprise because I said at the end of last episode when I should have been listening to you guys, I ordered a PS Vita because I got ants in my pants about buying something. So yeah. That is neither here nor there. But I think that functionality is within your reach, David, in a slightly modified form from what you're asking for. Hmm. Yeah. Kind of along with this, they've said that their official Steam machine is going to be coming out. They're developing it in conjunction with Alienware and Falcon Northwest, and it's going to be priced starting at around where the consoles are right now, except with higher performance out the gate. So,
yeah, that seems legit.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, there's nothing. This is Valve, so there's nothing saying they're going to deliver this at the time when they say they're going to, which, you know, it's worked for them in the past, so well.
They typically don't say when they're going to deliver something until they're ready to deliver it.
True. Yeah, good point there. You have successfully jumped in front of an unnecessary burn on a company that I like.
We're delivering it tomorrow.
Yeah, I don't know. I think this is kind of cool. I would like to, mostly for fan noise, to be entirely honest, I would like to get that computer out of the living room and into a like a closet or something. But I'm very sensitive to fan noise, you guys.
Couldn't you just buy longer cables?
I've already got a pretty long cable in that.
Really? Yeah. And the fan noise is bad enough that you can't put it far enough away?
Huh. Yeah, I guess. It's not rational. I mean, at least it's not the bugs anymore. The bugs inside the walls singing terrible songs that grate on my skin. So yeah, that's my
intervention. Intervention.
who else has a story?
I can kind of piggyback to maybe secondary swoop if David still had something to talk about Valve. Yes. I was going to talk a little bit more about the headset they were going to release with HTC.
Tag team. Here you go. Take the rock, man. Take the rock.
Yeah. What is this?
So it's basically what their answer to the Oculus is.
Where okay, good. Go on.
It's so it's a VR headset. They're going to call it Vive. Take it or leave it, whatever.
Vive.
Yeah, it's like Vine or like Valve, but just combine them, whatever. But they're releasing dev kits this spring, and it should be out later this year. And one of the things that was interesting that they talked about with releasing it, though, is uses outside of video games. One of the things that they're talking about is basically like attending concerts virtually or like going on vacations virtually. Using a headset like that. I don't know how the vacations thing would work, but concert seems kind of like a kind of cool idea.
Yeah, I can see that, or just kind of creating these experiences to, like, you know, tour a condo or whatever. Like, there is a good use for that outside of, I mean, basically anything that you previously would have used QuickTime 360 for. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know the university is trying to set up a thing with the Oculus Rift to basically let people like tour the university and kind of get an idea of like its layout and, you know, things like that.
Mm-hmm. So all what, like six people who will actually be able to do that will be able to do that.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's like they're going to have one and so you can like come and yeah. Their office and
the second you get
be
into
like
the...
here, let me show you where you need to actually be.
The second you get into the university zip code, like an unmarked van comes up, they black bag you, and then you wake up in a dark room with an Oculus, so that way you don't spoil the impression of the campus by actually setting foot on it.
Exactly.
That also works because UC's campus is laid out like a video game level anyway.
Yeah, pretty much.
A lot of jumping you got to do there.
Yep. There's a lot of verticality.
Yeah. Is it just me, or are the trails across McMicken intentionally bad just to buffer loading?
Guys, you know, people don't outright speak out when we get hyper local like that. I think it's a little bit of color. I think it's a little bit of a little bit of our shared past and history coming through. But I want to keep a tight, heavy lid on that. No, that's fine. We can talk about what it is. That was a good joke. It was like Metroid Prime, except with a quad.
That's exactly how I would describe UC.
Yeah. So it's also pretty cool, like along with those kind of non-gaming uses, did you see them talking about how they want to make it not a stationary kind of thing? Like they're designing it with kind of walking around in mind.
Wait, so they're designing it with running into walls in mind?
Yeah, they're designing it. So their tech demo is the intro to the Dick Van Dyke Show. As you walk around, you just see how many ottomans you can trip over. it comes with two free ambulance ride vouchers. Oh man, Nick and Night Slam for the win.
No, there's real ambulance rides or Oculus ambulances.
There's no real doctor. You're going to bleed out. Yeah. It's going to heal very poorly. You're going to walk with a limp.
And then you become someone else's surgeon simulator.
You know what? I scratch your back, you operate on my leg. Coming spring 2015. Yeah. Vive. Vive. Do we have a pin on that pronunciation?
We'll put it up to the crowds.
Okay, we have two questions, feng shui Vive/Vive or Vivi, the beloved black mage from Final Fantasy IX.
Yep.
Let's see here, Dennis.
Yeah, clearly the only connection you could make with Vivi.
Yep. David, how about you? You have another Valve jam, or have you been?
Valve has announced that they're going to be releasing Source 2 engine. They haven't said a great deal about it, but it's apparently going to be freely available to anyone. They kind of cited as kind of trying to piggyback on, I guess, reading between the lines on, you know, some of the success they've had with Steam. Is Steamworks? Is that content?
Yeah, Steamworks, Steam Workshop.
Yeah. So they say it's going to be, quote, available free to content developers. That's all they've really said about it. I feel like maybe, the takeaway I'm getting from this is we're never making, Half-Life 3, maybe you will.
I think the takeaway is fuck you, Epic and Unity. Like, you know, because boy oh boy, that race to the bottom on the dev middleware has taken hold. Like, you know, if this is in fact entirely free and there's no string attached, then that's a really big deal. Like, if you look at even as recent as like 3 years ago, on the Unreal Engine, I think you had to pay like thousands of dollars per seed in licensing fees. Either that, or you had to basically sign up for a royalty structure to where you were paying a percentage of revenue on every game sold.
Were you referencing, and again, I've just stumbled into this, apparently Unreal Engine 4 is also going to be free?
Yeah.
Yes.
That is very similar. This is a very recent, very, very recent development. Yeah. See what I did there? Yeah. I think this is cool. They've kind of alluded to, like, oh, have they rolled out Source 2 across Dota, or, you know, whatever. It would make sense if they did, because Dota is the only game they care about anymore, because it makes them a lot of money. But I don't know.
Yeah.
I think it's cool. Giving people with ideas free tools to do shit is a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I wonder, like, for Valve, obviously the revenue model is you're probably going to sell it on Steam.
Right.
I wonder for Unreal what the revenue model is.
I don't know, because Unity has the asset store. right? Like, they basically say, if you're a developer and you make something you want other people to be able to buy, put it on our marketplace, and, you know, we will take a cut of that. So that is kind of like offset it. I don't know what Unreal is doing to offset it.
Yeah. Well, because I don't know, like, who makes what, but it seemed to me like Unreal, you know, kind of the last cycle, basically made, you know, Unreal Tournament 2000, whatever, it sort of sucked. And, well, I mean, it wasn't that great. And, but then they've just been, you know, selling Unreal to, like, every shooter ever.
Maybe.
Yeah, I mean, presumably they're not doing that now.
Yeah. I mean, Unreal has been, like, the engine of choice for a lot of console development for a long time, too.
Right, right. So I wonder if maybe they're still going to charge for, like, commercial licenses.
I could see it. Especially because, like, any kind of revenue share model wouldn't work at that scale. Like, a big company, Electronic Arts, is going to say, fuck you, you're not going to get 3%. Because that would mm-hmm. be much, much more than what we would pay in a per-seat license.
Right.
Yeah. Economics of game development, guys.
Good stuff.
Yeah. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, I was kind of surprised that this wasn't Ben's, because before Arkham Knight has even been released, they have announced the next Batman game.
Brr?
Yeah. I give you guys...
Arkham Mid-Morning. Come on, Arkham Mid-Morning.
Yeah. No, it is Batman Arkham Underworld, and you play as the villains.
Mm.
So here,
are you for fucking real?
I am for fucking real.
Okay,
this is a real thing. The caveat is that it is on mobile.
Casuals.
Yeah. Oh, so this is basically just Injustice: Gods Among Us.
Maybe I don't know.
Fighting game where you pay $3 to play as the Joker or any other character you would want to play as.
Maybe. I'm not sure of the mechanics yet. It's going to involve some kind of base building and training henchmen.
Oh, yeah.
It's done by the same company who recently announced that they are going to do a Mortal Kombat X fighting game for mobile devices, which seems like the worst idea in the history of the world to me.
Hmm.
But also, I kind of like this take on Batman. I can't think of a game where I've been allowed to play as the outright villain and kind of... take down Batman, if you will.
You ever play Evil Genius?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, it's a game that came out like in the early 2000s. It is a it's like a dungeon keeper, except with an Austin Powers super spy, super villain kind of thing, where you're outfitting a base and trying to defend it against encroaching do-gooders. You've got like henchmen and stuff.
Ah, okay, yeah, this seems at least like it'll be something like that.
Yeah,
so.
Except with an energy system.
Yeah. Yeah, well, hopefully not.
I mean,
we'll see.
Almost assuredly, yes.
A man can hope,
Yeah.
But yeah, it looks like an official Batman game, and they even went as far as to give it the Arkham title as well, so hopefully they'll do a good job with it.
That's more in Square Enix and Warner Brothers' control.
Mm-hmm.
I think.
How do you mean?
Oh, like that doesn't have to do with Rocksteady or anybody who has direct control over the quality of the game. Like that comes down to Warner Brothers and Square Enix saying, okay, this can have the Arkham name.
Yeah, I guess that's true. It's a development studio called Turbine working on it.
So there's another game that came out in between. I don't know if it was the last Batman game or the game before that now, but it was called Gotham City Imposters.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. That was apparently a pretty good game.
Yeah, I'm just reading about it now. It was made by Monolith, which is the people who made the Shadows of Mordor game that came out this last year. But mm-hmm. I've not played that, but you can also play as villains in that game, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, you play as either, like, Joker fanboys or Batman fanboys, basically.
Yep.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And that's like it plays out like APB, like it's an action multiplayer action game.
Okay.
Yeah.
Turbine, people will know them from MMOs.
Yeah.
So they did Lord of the Rings Online, Dungeons and Dragons Online, Asheron's Call.
Oh, Lord of the Rings Online. Okay, I knew the name sounded familiar from somewhere.
Yeah.
Lord of the Rings Online is pretty quality.
D&D Online's okay too.
Well,
I mean, if you look at it as an MMO and not as a
it was not me about to speak negative of D&D Online. It was me to. About to speak highly nostalgically of D&D Online.
Okay, cool.
No one needs to hear that.
Yeah. Huh. I mean, it could be cool. I don't know.
The premise sounds cool. It sounds similar to the Metal Gear game for the Vita.
Yeah. Well, and I like the idea of taking the question of where do they get all these henchmen and turning it into where do I get all these henchmen?
Turning into a pressing concern. Have you continued watching Venture Brothers, Dennis?
Maybe one or two episodes past where we were when I last spoke about it. So not very far.
Okay. Yeah. You watching it spurred me to watch all of the series again. And
I got laughs.
It sort of ramps up.
Yeah, it picks up by like the third episode of season one. It's
the highly magical guy who he's renting out space in his
Dr. Orpheus.
I think that might have been the most recent one that we watched.
Yeah,
which I quite enjoy.
And his daughter Triana. Yeah, that is a really good exploration of that of that particular stripe of comic book supervillainy.
Yeah,
yeah, I can't speak highly enough of it.
It's good stuff.
Cool. That sounds like a brief, you guys.
Mm-hmm. Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we read aloud a question and you, like our faithful fans, answer it. Dennis, what is the question that we put forth?
We put forth a question about lost treasures in gaming. So what games are really good or innovative or just otherwise worthwhile, but have been largely forgotten by history?
Yeah, so just stuff that disappeared off the face of the earth. And in case it doesn't come up in the responses, you chose an image from Power Stone?
Yeah, I was kind of, I guessed what David's response would be.
Yes.
So you swooped him. It's the swoop cast, you guys.
I visually swooped him.
Visual swoop.
Visual swoop. Yeah, so I will pick us up here with Errol Sherwood. Great name, Earl. Thank you. Thank you so much for being our fan. Writing and saying, some of my favorite games growing up were the Lost Vikings games, specifically the Lost Vikings 2. They were puzzle platformers where you switch between different characters with different skills to solve puzzles, collect items, and finish each level. Recently, the Trine series has adopted this mechanic, but I think until Trine came out, the Lost Vikings were the first games to do it. Maybe someone can correct me on that. These games were really fun to play and had a great sense of humor, but I feel like other than the characters popping up once in a while in current Blizzard games, nobody really talks about them. Have you played them? Am I wrong about them being forgotten?
I remember a while back, this would have been like pre-World of Warcraft, Blizzard re-released a whole bunch of their games, including... Lost Vikings. I played a little bit of it, but no, I don't know. I didn't really get far enough into it to really see the mechanics. But
I've never heard of it.
Yeah, it's one of those things that pops up whenever as a joke whenever Blizzard says, "Oh, we're about to announce something new." This is a Blizzard, like a Blizzard franchise. And so, you know, instead of being the next WoW entry or expansion, people say, yes, so it's going to be Lost Vikings 3, Hope Springs Eternal. I've never played them. They look pretty fun.
Yeah, I mean, they were like, you know, 2D platformers. So I'm just going to pretty much repeat what you said. Yeah, they seem pretty cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, I know recently I saw a blurb about them being in a Blizzard game and got all excited, but then turns out they're going to be in whatever Blizzard's like crossover cash grab game is they're making.
Oh, Heroes of the Storm.
Yeah. Is that like a D Defenders of the Tree or whatever yes, that it's MOBA.
It's Defenders of the Tree. it is their Dota clone.
Okay.
Yeah. It's their MOBA. Massively online tree. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can't speak to this in particular since I have no other place to talk about this. I'm just going to throw this in here. the notion of being able to switch characters in a platformer brought up the Tiny Toons game for Game Boy.
Oh, holy shit.
Yeah, I know, right? So this has been on my mind because the Retronauts just did an episode about Tiny Toons video games. And that was one of the first games I really ever played and beat, you know, on my own as a little kid. And that was cool because you could switch between Buster, Plucky, or Hamlet. And each of them threw different pieces of produce in, like, different arcs. And so you had to switch back and forth between them as the situation saw fit. There was also the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles game for the NES, where each of them had their own weapons, but none of those were multiplayer, which I think was the specific hook that people are really like reminiscent about Lost Vikings, or nostalgic about Lost Vikings for. Yeah. Let's see here. Ben, what does Franz say?
Franz says, Spycraft, the great game. I'm not sure if that's the title of the game or if he's saying that Spycraft is the great game.
Could be both.
Yeah. It's a point and click with puzzles that actually made sense, which sound okay, whatever. And it's an FMV game that didn't suck. It's a realistic-ish take on espionage. It will probably turn out to be as cheesy as hell if I ever go back to it. But back then, it blew my mind.
Hmm.
I really miss FMV games. They were so cool.
They're having like a little bit of a resurgence. Like you can find an indie one on occasion, like on iOS.
Oh, and, really? What is it? Is it Tex Murphy or whatever?
Yes, Tex Murphy.
Yeah.
It's like motion capture or like face video capture, right? But what's it stand for?
Full motion video.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I kind of like face video capture.
Yep.
Oh, it's an FVC game.
Yeah, wouldn't that just be L.A. Noir?
Yeah.
Spycraft, why is that?
L.A. Noir is overacting capture game.
It's. I didn't expect him to be so angry. The game. It's like, whoa, man, chill out. The game. Yeah, that's pretty good. For some reason, I thought that was a Sid Meier game, but I guess it's not. I know that there was one. Covert Action, Covert Ops or whatever was the Sid Meier one.
It is indeed Spycraft the Great Game, and it's available on GOG.
Ooh. Yeah, so he can go back and revisit it, but who knows if that's going to be a good idea or not.
Yeah.
David, what's Brandon say?
Brennan says, I was a huge fan of The Legend of Dragoon. Pretty standard JRPG, but I enjoyed the story and liked the fact that the protagonist was a grown-ass man. I'm tired of teenagers. Also, I believe... Oh, sorry. I'm tired of teenagers who don't know shit about shit saving the world. Also, I believe he goes on to say, get off my lawn. Yeah. Yeah, I can see how that would actually maybe be kind of a more interesting angle as opposed to just the weird, you know, shipping and stuff like that in most JRPGs.
Shipping.
Love triangles and whatnot.
Oh, yeah. I mean, just that every JRPG or Japanese thing in general has teenagers in it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that was a controversy around Final Fantasy XII, right? It was originally supposed to be about Fran, Bosch, what's his name? Balthier and Ash. But they added in the little kids because you got to have an angle. You got to have something that the kids can relate to. Which is my best Japanese businessman impersonation. Guys, I really need to workshop this one. It creates a lot of confusion.
As opposed to like Metal Gear Solid, where Snake is like 80 now.
Oh yeah,
I don't know how you could get to a better impression without getting more racist. So.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. So we were doing a Kung Fu video parody for a client video, and I was called in to do the to do the voiceover for it. You know, just because if there is a weird thing that, you know, if there's a weird angle, I'm generally the guy that they go to. You know, if they don't want somebody who's like, so you've got a product and your thing is like, you know, it's not like that. And I agonized over how racist because you kind of have to throw a little bit of, like, for lack of a better word, ping pong into it. And
I feel like you could do the, like, there were, like, literally three guys who did all the voices for all the dubbed Kung Fu movies. Mm-hmm. I feel like you could just do one of theirs.
Yeah, but I had to be the voice of the wise master.
There's literally, like, one guy who does the wise master voice in every...
I just want to be on that call where you're like, okay, so how racist do you want us to go with this?
Yeah. How many calls do you want to get from defamation leagues? Well, no, anti-defamation leagues. Sorry. You don't want to get any call from defamation leagues because fuck those guys. Why would they call themselves that? Yeah. But, let's see here. Legend of Dragoon, that was fun. I remember playing the first three discs of that. Yeah, I have nothing else to say other than that was fun. Ben, what's Steven say? Actually, there we go, Steven. Sorry.
Actually, pass it off to someone else because I want to go for the one that's a proper number away because I have a comment on that one.
Okay. Dennis, what's Steven say?
First off, he says, let's see if I can make a comment without a misspelling, an incorrect title tense, or Cole janking my steeds.
You know, by saying that, I'm going to look even harder, right? I run a tight ship here.
Cast.
Target acquired.
You just painted a target on your back, Steven.
Swoop cast engage. So I feel like I should be playing like Masterpiece Theater music in the background. I've always had a fondness for Landstalker, the Treasures of King Knoll, an isometric Genesis adventure RPG that I rented a few times in my youth and always remembered later as, quote, that game where the characters have big feet, unquote. Yeah. I'm not familiar with this game.
Yeah,
I had to look it up, and truly it is the game where characters have big feet.
At least they're well grounded.
Damn it, Cole!
What? Yeah, they do look kind of like walking teeth a little bit. Oh, this game looks really fun. I like this. It's cute. Any game that has this screenshot, which is an elfin hero, talking to a chicken. Yes. the text box just says cock. I'm fucking serious. That is a thing. I will put it in the robot so you don't think I'm just being crass.
That is wonderful.
So yeah, this has come up every once in a while on suggestions for Watch Out for Fireballs, and if we didn't have to be so strategic with how we did our JRPGs, I would be definitely gung-ho about doing it because we need more 16-bit RPGs, and we need more 16-bit RPGs that were not published by Square.
Oh, poor Square.
Well, Square gets a lot of attention, you know?
Oh, that is a wonderful.
Did you guys get
shot.
The image? Like,
yeah, I just opened it.
Okay.
I don't
That's
think
hilarious.
I did. Do I do this?
Yeah, it'll show up in the sidebar, but yeah, Landstalker. I'll pop it into an emulator and see how it treats us. You know,
I like how it's an asterisk that is speaking as well.
Yeah, chickens don't have names
unless you name them like Mr. Bok-Bok-Ok. That's a perfectly good chicken name.
Oh my god, I found Landstalker has the original. What is it? The woodpecker weasel riding a woodpecker shot.
Weasel what?
Wait, that's like a genre.
The thing that's lighting up the internet now with there's apparently like a
Yeah, I saw that.
this photo showed up. Now this is horrible podcasting. I apologize, everyone.
You're just making me have to put this in the notes. That really angers me.
I'm sorry. It's not even that good, but I'm really selling it here.
It's just a dude riding a bird.
Yeah, but it's green.
Man, those feet are huge. like those feet are longer than his legs are long.
Yeah, that's
it's
true.
A condition. Can you be sensitive, please?
Yeah, it's called clownitis.
Maybe it's one of those things where they wanted the player to know what square he's occupying on the map, so they're like, all right, give him big feet.
Yeah. So let's see here. David Petrucco writes in saying, Monster Rancher. I spent entire summers playing the various Monster Rancher games, and I'm sad to see them not making anything new. The last console version, Evo, was by far the weakest in the console series, and the 2010 DS version was okay, but the handheld versions were never as expansive due to system limitations. I'll always remember Monster Hunter as that, not Monster Hunter, Monster Rancher as that game on the PlayStation where you put your CDs in to generate monsters.
You could do that?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's really freaking cool.
So it would take like an audio fingerprint of the first track and then use that as like a randomizer to give you new dudes.
That's awesome. That's, you know, the question like, you know, what monster would, I'm blanking on a good song to use, would Journey Don't Stop Believing generate?
I don't know. like a drunkard at a karaoke bar? I don't know.
Truly the worst monster.
Yes, a real shitty monster. That's the least interesting Pokemon. Yeah.
So I guess then presumably the reason this is a lost treasure is because CDs died out?
Maybe, but they continued it well after they were running CD-based media, right? Like, that worked on the PlayStation because you could pop the top open while the game was still running and just pop a new disc in, and it would be fine. Whereas, like, most current consoles will do something crazy if you eject a disc, like it'll reset or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or they do something crazier if you pop the top off, like break.
Yeah. You try and pry it open to find it's turtle gold. Yeah. Let's see here, Ben. What's Jacob say?
All right. Jacob says, Resident Evil 4 was one of my favorite survivor horror games of all time. I know it's not that old, but I don't hear much that much buzz about it anymore. Not really any big Resident Evil fandoms out there, are there? I would stay up night after night listening closely for any sounds curled up in my room in the dark. The only thing I didn't like about it was when I yelled from the occasional jump scare. I would wake up my sister in the next room. My parents never liked that.
Yeah, no.
I was just talking about this game last night, actually, with one of my friends. We were talking about, like, what is a game that can match that has come out in recent time. And there are some, but it's a solid game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, so they adopted the action, the action play, but they kept a little bit of the spookiness, at least until the last third of it. And they very quickly, in the next two games, abandoned the spooky.
Yeah. And that's where it all
Resident
went downhill.
Resident Evil 6 is so great.
Oh, I like Resident Evil 6 a lot, but it is very tenuously tied to like the things that I really enjoy about Resident Evil as a whole.
It's spookless.
It's no longer a survival horror game. It is now a, I don't know, zombie boxing simulator.
Zombie.
Well, a Zuba.
Yeah. No, I just saw Zombie Boxing Simulator on Steam Greenlight, so. Yeah.
Well, this is actually a pretty good opportunity to slide this in here. We're doing another poll for Watch Out for Fireballs.
Ooh.
Yeah. We're using this to determine what we're going to play for our spring survival horror game.
Mm.
Yeah. So do you want to hear the four possibilities?
Sure.
Yeah. So we're going to choose between Amnesia: The Dark Descent. Mm-hmm. Fatal Frame 2.
Ooh.
Okay.
Resident Evil 4.
Uh-huh.
Or Silent Hill 3.
I wonder which one Cole wants to play.
That would mean I'd have to return Silent Hill 3 to Cole.
Yeah, assuming that's the one I want to play. Who knows? I can't express any favorites because I don't want to put a thumb on the scale. Yeah, but don't worry, Ben. Sorry, don't worry, Dennis. I've got the HD one on PS3, so you're fine.
Of course.
Yes.
Yeah.
The game is drunk friend proof for Cole.
Yeah. Well, no, he can just come over. It's like on a shelf. It's even alphabetized by system, so he can actually look. Just go to the PS3 and go to S. It's right there.
Next, I was saying the fact that you had a backup. Oh, yeah. I guess it's not too drunk friend proof.
Yeah, it's not too party proof.
It's only fun if you still the same one again.
I'm just gonna take something else.
Yeah. So you can go to the Patreon page and check that out. That is running until midnight on March the 13th. So a week from when you're hearing this, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Looking forward to that. So I'm gonna come back from that message break, and I'm going to ask David, can you read what Chad says?
Sure. He says, I may have mentioned this before, but the couch co-op aspect of the Army of Two games has, so far as I know, never been replicated. It's not necessarily forgotten to history, as it's not old, but its unremarkable storyline, egregious violence, and broisms will surely bury it for eternity. The best comparison I can think of is Portal 2's co-op system, a walled garden scenario, if that makes any sense.
I don't
like
know.
Like I
that it
said,
does.
I agree with them. I think in particular the second one, it's more choices. It's just so far over the line that I can't see it surviving to posterity.
Mm-hmm. David and I had this conversation a little bit ago. That Army of Two hit in this weird transition age where Twitch wasn't a thing yet. And so you couldn't really get what this game was like to play. Mm-hmm. Because you know the like demo videos or whatever didn't do it justice. It really, really is something special when you're doing it couch co-op. And I've thought several times that would be a great game to go back and do a playthrough on Twitch, so people can see the kind of jewel that was. I totally agree with Chad on this one.
I feel like what you need to know is that it has a dedicated fist bump button.
Why not?
I think the better question is why. Yeah. So the way Chad wrote this, it looked like he was talking about Bro Sims. I'm not gonna make any jokes about that. I'm just going to let that hang there for a second and fill
Sims
in your own jokes.
Pack.
Sims bro down. So I feel like there might be some posterity for Army of Two, especially if it remains available on digital distribution, because it is a co-op thing, it may end up falling into the so bad it's good, or you know, good bad movie, you know, mm-hmm. kind of a kind of territory for it. However, a good bad movie you can, you know, be done with in 90 minutes, whereas I assume this is at least a 6-hour game.
Yeah, but that's the thing, is it's a really, really good game.
Most good bad movies don't allow you the option to allow it to happen.
Oh, well, not the second one. The first one is amazing.
Yeah.
Okay, the first one. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, and I would argue the second one is very good overall, which is one very unfortunate moral choice that no one really... It's, again, one of those things where no one thought through what would happen if someone actually took the option where you didn't do the quote-unquote right thing.
Right.
So, yeah.
Hmm. Yeah. Let's see here. Dennis, can you tell us what Sean Petrie says? Yes, it is Petrie. He corrected us very kindly over email.
Nice. Sean says, I always reflect back on Blast Corps for the N64. I remember renting it with a half dozen friends, and we all took turns going through nearly the whole game. Nothing like rolling into a nearly abandoned town in a dump truck, swinging it around and smashing a grain silo, only to have to hop into a robot and either do a barrel roll or jump into the sky and plummet into a skyscraper, only to clear a path so nuclear missiles don't bump into something and explode because the truck can't turn. It always gave me the feeling of Tonka trucks for big boys. And after reading that, I have no idea what this game is about.
It's like a top-down...
I love the fact that you apparently have to jump into a robot and do a barrel roll.
Yeah, I mean, it's part of the mission. You don't question command. No, this is a it's like a top down action like vehicle based destruction game, I guess is the only way I can think to describe it. It really is a thing of its own, and yeah, I don't I know like that I've seen it replicated.
I feel like you could almost even extend that and say like the entire like vehicular combat genre seems to have kind of died.
Yeah,
you know, like, anything from like, you know, the
Twisted Metal, Vigilante,
Twisted Metals through like or games like this.
Yeah, the last Twisted Metal.
Twisted Metal.
Yeah, it didn't do very well at all.
Is that because it was bad or because it didn't sell well?
I have no idea.
Or maybe because no one cared.
Both.
if there's a sweet tooth in the forest, does it burn down because his hair is fire?
Ah, auto assault was so good.
Yeah, that, like was that action? Because it's MMO, right?
Yeah, but it was pretty much a vehicular combat game.
You almost said it again.
Yeah, I've got vehicular homicide on the brain, so if I suddenly disappear, you don't know what happened.
You're laying low. Well, I know exactly what happened. You said it five times.
Like, will.
Like I could turn. You know, if you go into a bathroom with the lights off and say vehicular homicide into the mirror five times,
a car plows through the wall. Yeah. Oh, it's terrible.
Okay.
People but don't no, try that yeah, at home.
It was basically
when you
that,
live on the third
except,
floor.
You had firing like arcs in, or firing pie charts, and I don't know.
Let's see here. Twisted Metal, like it reviewed okay. Like it got a 76 on Metacritic, which I guess is
that's
nothing.
Not okay.
Man, that's. I'm fine buying a 76 game. Great inflation. Great inflation. Not great inflation. Great inflation. Let's see here. I'm talking nonsense, so I'm going to move on to the next one. Let's hear. Allison Baker writes in saying, Sentient for the PC or PS1. It's a great little adventure game wherein the player is tasked with investigating an outbreak of radiation sickness aboard a space station. Things go wrong immediately, and you discover that the station is on a collision course with the sun. Oh, no. The gameplay involved exploring the labyrinthian station and questioning the crew members with an expansive dialogue system. This took place in real time as you hurled towards your inevitable demise. I was never able to complete it at the time, and since then, I lost my copy. I need to check eBay. That sounds fucking great.
Yeah.
The closest I've played to that, like at least in that description, is a game called Siberia. Now, it's not spelled like the region in Russia, because that is an actual adventure game, which is pretty good. The Siberia that I'm talking about is spelled Siberia, S-Y-B-E-R-I-A. It had a very similar setup. You could die on the first screen by accidentally walking into a man-sized fan.
Oh, gosh.
Yep. It was real bad. That may be good Haptic Suffering material, actually. I may put my thumb on the scale to get that in there. We don't do that. But yeah, this sounds really good. I'm very curious. I wonder if that's a GOG. If that's a GOGable.
Doesn't look like it shows up on GOG, but it might just not be. Yeah.
Yeah, sounds really inventive anyway. David, you were going to say something.
Oh, just because this is apparently the podcast for that, Labyrinthine?
Labyrinthine, why does that sound familiar?
How you pronounce it.
Labyrinthine?
Yes.
Yeah, there we go.
Okay.
Cool. I feel like this whole like real time, you've got a time limit for the entire game. I feel like that's one of those things that everyone always like, oh, what a cool concept. And then it's like, fuck this. I didn't mean to run out of time. Like, don't give me more time when you run out of time.
If the loop is tight enough or if they give you the ability to like jump back, I can be kind of down with it. Like, it's a bummer in Darkseid because it's way too early. However, you know, like the Last Express is predicated on that loop. I feel like it's relatively successful for that.
Yeah. I was going to say this was a PlayStation 1 game, so the loop was probably not tight enough, and they probably did not give you good options for jumping back.
Yeah. I don't know. The last Express came out like 96.
What about the Dead Rising games? Did those...
Ben, you would be better to speak to that.
Yeah, they had time mechanics with them.
Right, I'm just saying, I don't remember them being too bad on that.
Yeah. You could. The nice thing about that is, if you started a new game, all your stats were maintained, so you could ruin everything and you'd be okay.
Yeah,
by all the Zombrex.
I think that you were about to cut in with something, Ben.
I was gonna say it definitely needs to be done in the right way. So like the time mission at the end of Halo 1 is fantastic, mm-hmm. but that's a tight loop, I guess, if we're talking about tightness of loops.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Hmm. Yeah, I'm going to have to check this out because that sounds really, really good. To me, anyway, to my sensibility. Let's see here. Ben, what does Christopher say?
Christopher says, Sim fucking Tower.
Motherfucker.
You should add like a explosion sound effect after I say that.
I've already done the sound effect I'm going to do.
Right. wait, with Sim so fucking tower, the one where you build a giant brothel?
Continue, Ben.
I'd also add the first Age of Empires. That was my first entrance into the whole real-time strategy game. And actually got me to learn what the hell a Hittite was.
Yes, Hittite.
Which I don't know at such a young age. What's a Hittite?
It was a Age of Empires. A Semitic tribe.
All right.
Yeah, as exemplified by Uriah the Hittite from the Bible. Part of he was a soldier in King David's army. Oh, in the Book of Samuel. Yeah. What? I can know things. Come on.
I have to be honest, I'm really surprised that the Sim Tower games have never got an expansion, just because, you know, it was a really, really popular game. It, you know, still seems like a game people liked, and then, you know, the Sims franchise then just kind of exploded. So I'm kind of surprised it never got an expansion, just even simply as a cash grab.
See, it's funny because, you know, both of these kind of games fell victim to the same forces, I think. You know, Sim Tower and Age of Empires, right? Like, you could argue that, like, Tiny Tower is a relatively new version of Sim Tower, right? But that isn't, you know, nearly, like, they had to compromise it so much in order to make it profitable that it's not even really the same game anymore, right? It's about waiting and, you know, getting bucks and using that to, you know, decide which business is going to be where and riding the elevator up. Whereas they've done recent versions of Age of Empires, but Microsoft Game Studios has mishandled it so much in trying to modernize it that I think they lost what people like about it. I never played the games. You know what? Forget that. I played Age of Mythology, similar, except, you know, with goofy stuff in it in terms of gods and things. Yeah, I think that both of those just didn't survive the modern PC kind of sensibility.
Sure. I can see that. Guess maybe that's something that'll inevitably at some point be indie gamed.
Yeah. Sim Tower is great though. I have a lot of good memories of that. Yeah. Let's see here. Who's going to go next? Who just read that one? I'm sorry.
I did.
Yeah, that was you, Ben. Let's hear David. What's Ryan say?
Ryan says, "Damn, I hope I didn't miss the cutoff.
Just barely.
Mine would have been Baten Kaitos, Eternal Wings, and The Lost Ocean. An interesting and well put together RPG that I rarely hear people bring up. Then again, that seems to be the case with a lot of GameCube games.
Yeah."
I don't know. I had a friend in high school, Andre, I think.
Yeah.
He was a huge fan of this game. And, you know, at least from him describing it to me, it seemed like it was really, really crazy in depth.
Mm-hmm.
But, I never heard much about it other than from him.
Yeah, Baten Kaitos is what he's referring to.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think that, like, late 32-bit / early whatever you call PS2 and GameCube, like, just those RPGs just don't have any staying power. Like just these weird kind of
one-off. So many of them, right?
There were like there was this weird glut. Like people, I think the only like relatively new franchise, and even then it wasn't really new, but it kind of flourished in America was the Tales games, and those I don't think I've seen anything come out of those recently, right? Like there's just a bunch of really, you know, because like if I was going to throw in with this, I would say like Breath of Fire. We haven't seen any of those since Dragon Quarter, and I know there's like Breath of Fire 6, but it's a free to play online kind of thing, and that's really disturbing to me, or at least disappointing. But yeah, Baten Kaitos is one of those ones that people speak about, but I have no idea what it is.
Because yeah, it just I know. Came out with so many of them. While I was hearing it, it seemed like it had a lot of. I just remember there being a lot of like really in-depth like boss mechanics and like tons of, you know, optional bosses and stuff like this. Grant, I'm hearing this all secondhand, but I don't know.
Yeah, it's a pretty good one. Dennis, why don't you round us out?
All right. Robin says, Paradroid for the Commodore 64. You are a lowly cleaning robot and survive by temporarily possessing some more powerful robots through a highly innovative minigame. The more powerful the robot, the harder the minigame was to win, and the shorter the possession time. This led to crazy shooting, bumping, possessing frenzies to stay alive. There is an app which emulates the original, but it would be awesome to see an updated version with a greater variety of robots and capabilities. I was thinking of stacking while reading that. I don't know if that game actually had time limits on how long you could take over another doll in the game. But that's the only thing I can think of that emulates that kind of gameplay.
Like maybe Oddworld Abe's Odyssey a little bit. I could see being something that approaches that. I don't know. Like that sounds really interesting. I'm going to have to take a look at least in videos, because Commodore 64 is a huge blind spot for me.
How sophisticated was like what console or whatever would Commodore 64 be kind of comparable to?
It was like even earlier than NES, but it was still more powerful. Like it had a better time doing like more complex kind of games like Ultima 4. Yeah.
So like somewhere between Atari and NES.
Yeah, like 8-bit computer would be the broad category that it falls under, except with Bitchin' Music.
Nice.
Yeah. Huh. So let's go around and do ours. Thank you everybody for chiming in with your responses. It really kind of you've turned me on to a surprising number of really cool things that I have created a list for myself to check out.
Woohoo.
I'll do mine real quick. Mega Man Legends.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Boo-hoo. They canceled the Mega Man Legends 3. It is a major injustice, whatever. But, like, that was a really good series, and I revisited it recently when we were doing the Brave Fencer Musashi episode of Watch Out for Fireballs, just to see if, you know, my beloved version of a game from around that time would run and hold up better, I think, than that one did for me, than Musashi did. And it does. And, like, it has tons of personality still, and I like the loop, and I like the action RPG kind of side of it. I would say I would love to see that. If not, you know, get a full sequel, at least be adapted into a, you know, form that can be played and appreciated more easily than just, you know, being lucky enough to own a physical copy like I do.
Yeah. I'm not familiar with those games nearly well enough to comment, unfortunately.
They're really good. Like they're behind. It's a weird early version of an over the shoulder shooter.
Huh.
Yeah. I just remember forward and back is forward and back, but then side to side on the control stick is turn in place.
Yeah. But you had strafe on your shoulder, so you could actually, like, the key to victory was being able to circle strafe around your enemies. And it had, like, a really good lock on. Yeah.
Like in GoldenEye.
Exactly. Let's see here. Ben, how about you?
I know I often mention Urban Chaos as being a really good game that no one really talks about. That's the first game by Rocksteady Studios, and I'll stand by that. That's a good game. Another one I could think of was Fusion Frenzy was a really good party game. I feel like that has not really been innovated on, but I mean it's basically like a Mario Party but not Nintendo. So
yeah, that was a. Xbox, that was Microsoft first party, right?
Yeah, it was the game that came with Halo, and that's how people found out about it.
Yeah. I never played enough of that to know.
It's good.
Yeah. How about you, David?
Well, first, and this is one that kind of came up and, you know, was reminded of reading some of the early ones, would be Auto Assault. That, I don't know, I think it had a fairly interesting setting, and I think it's about the closest I've ever seen to a game legitimately doing an action MMO.
Right.
So, unfortunately, it's actual MMO mechanics were rather crappy, but...
it just wasn't balanced that well?
Say that again?
It just wasn't balanced that well?
No, it was just, I think the two biggest things were their grouping didn't quite work. There's no real reason to group, and you were all in, you know, cars, so you could all, you know, not stay together at very high speeds. also, the crafting mechanic was kind of cool because it had... a lot of like destructible structures, and that's how you got raw material, was like blowing up abandoned buildings and stuff. But then the crafting system was just incredibly over the top complex. So
that studio got shut down because they were part of the Lego universe side of things. Their holding company said, yeah, this isn't doing any good, so we're going to dissolve your entire studio.
Yeah, that seems rational. Yeah.
And then NCSoft now continues to publish things that will succeed in Korea.
Yeah.
Did I touch a nerve? I'm sorry.
You know, City of Heroes also belongs on this list.
Yeah.
But
oh, sure.
No, I think my big one, though, would probably be Power Stones, as Dennis guessed. I don't know, like, in general, I think, the sort of, I don't know what you'd call them, the kind of free-roam fighting games, you know, kind of like Power Stones and like Super Smash Bros. 2D scale are something I really like. I also really like the way they really doubled down on, like, the stages that would really affect gameplay and, you know, change over time and stuff like that. So,
yeah, man, I have such good memories. Like that first Christmas that we got the Dreamcast, just over break with nothing to do, you know, being hunkered down in the basement playing that game just over and over again. When I got my Dreamcast, I got Sonic Adventure and that, and it was like the happiest I'd been with a video game.
Yeah.
Until the next Christmas when I got Shenmue and Seaman, rest in peace, Leonard Nimoy. The Dreamcast. I really love that system.
I'm surprised. I know, particularly Power Stones, but you know, in general, I'm surprised more didn't get picked up off of the Dreamcast.
Yeah, I mean, like they're big developers. Like Capcom did Power Stone. Like. They're not fucking around. Like, I'm kind of surprised that no Power Stone character made its way into like Marvel versus Capcom, even as like a third tier, you know, kind of, you know, just throwaway character or something.
Right. Like, yeah. Who was the guy that was like the Dragon Ball Z ripoff? Like, Wu-Tang?
Yeah. Wang Tang.
Wang Tang.
Yeah. Or Wong Tong. I'm not sure. Yeah. Oh, man, I have a lot of good memories of that. Dennis, why don't you round us out?
Yeah, so the game that I had in mind when writing this, I realized actually just had a re-release, therefore invalidating my answer. But my answer would have been the Homeworld games.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah, which are the like the...
You couldn't 3D. Have picked a more timely example, Dennis.
Yeah. So those are. I think I only played the original one. Never got around to Homeworld 2, but just the 3D space RTS was something I'd never seen before, and just the feel of the game from the setting to the visual style was something really unique that I appreciated. So
it's a really pretty game.
It is an incredibly pretty game. Yeah. And just the way all the ships have kind of light trails that go behind them. So you watch these space battles unfold, and it's just, you know, these lines drawn around each other. It is really, really cool. So I might have to get the remastered collection and just dip back into it. Yeah. But I mean, I knew that was a thing. I think I even used it as a brief at some point, and then just totally forgot about it. And have not been able to think of an alternate Lost Treasure style game. So
that's like
consider that a lost treasure found.
Yes, it is an unearthed treasure. So that is something that was really rare, I think, in RTSs at that time, which was a slow paced real time strategy game. Like, it was really methodical, right? Am I wrong in that?
I'm say more about what you're thinking when you say that.
Like, it's not about actions per minute. It's more like you send something, you set something to go, and then things kind of slowly move their course.
Yeah, it feels like it's happening in space over vast distances.
Yeah,
for both better and worse. Mm-hmm. I think it did. The one thing that was frustrating about it was it did have a bit of that XCOM effect where you could kind of screw yourself early on with decisions and then not realize that you were screwed until several more hours were invested.
Was there persistent stuff that happened between missions, or?
Yeah, it was kind of your home base, or your mothership, I guess it was called. Maybe it wasn't, I don't know. Yeah. But your mothership could take damage, and if you just got in too tight a spot with your mothership, and how you managed those resources, there was just like no way you were going to survive battles later on.
Right. I only ever played the demo, so I may have a skewed perception of this.
Yeah, but like you said, an incredibly pretty game, which looks like it's only been made prettier. But yeah, so that is my non-answer.
I mean, it's an answer. Like, yeah, you know, some of these have to have happy endings.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, it gives us hope for all the other ones that we've talked about.
Yeah. So thank you, Dennis, for putting that question out. And thank you, listeners, for coming out in force. Again, I feel like we say it every week, but it is true every week. We are staggered by your turnout and your thoughtful responses. So if you would like to continue doing that or get into the habit of doing it, we're on Facebook at facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. Dennis puts those out on Tuesdays, most of the time in the afternoon, and you can see those there. Get right on the air.
Yeah, I didn't call you out on it in the moment, Cole, but I think it was last week where you said essentially the same thing. I totally agree with the message, but what you said it as like we're constantly amazed at how thoughtful your responses are or something like that, but just said it in a way that it's like, man, I didn't think these guys were that smart.
No, I just...
It's amazing that you guys can type.
Yeah. Yeah, you're just a bunch of fucking dullards. You listen to this horse shit, don't you? Yeah. Give me your lunch money right now. Yeah. It's good. Like,
yeah, you guys are awesome.
Yeah, I mean, like, I just
podcasts for people who love video games and bullying. Yeah.
Yeah. People who love video games and hate themselves. Yeah, no, like, I, you know, let me opine for a second. We have an awesome community of people who, you know, think about what they say, which mm-hmm. you can't take it for granted. And like, it's always been that way. We have regulars, but new faces pop in and they match the tone. Like, we are so incredibly fortunate to have such a great, you know, network of support out there, people who tune in. I'm grateful on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Moving on.
We just kind of sat in that warm fuzzy moment for a minute.
Yeah, we did.
The grind.
It is now time for the grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past, you know, week or so, just to draw an arbitrary line around it. Who wants to volunteer to go first?
I can go.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I've just kind of got an old classic that I dipped back into. All the snow made me go back to SSX.
Oh.
which I absolutely loved and sunk a ton of time into and then kind of drifted away from. But I've meant to go back to it for a while now, and it's just the blizzarding out kind of finally swayed me to do it. And I thought, like I said, I'd sunk a ton of time into that game. I thought I'd seen most of it and pretty well completed it. And then when I went back into the track select mode, I saw I've only done about a third of the challenges in the game.
Oh, damn.
Yeah, so it was like this huge surprise present to myself that it wasn't just going to be retreading old stuff. Like, I really have barely scratched the surface of this game. I think it's probably because I went really heavily into the multiplayer.
When
I played it last time, and then coming back to it now, just have a whole bunch of stuff in single player to explore that I never touched before, which is good because I can kind of go back to all the easier runs and relearn everything.
Right.
Which that's always the biggest concern coming back to a game like this is, hey, I used to be really good at it and kind of just have muscle memory for all the buttons and what the right thing to do was. And now, I'm kind of rusty, and how easy will it be to break back in?
Shaking the cobwebs off. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. It was surprisingly easy to do. Mostly because I think the game doesn't penalize you for doing, let me say it this way. The game doesn't penalize you unless you do the same trick twice in a row.
Right.
So as long as you are doing different tricks on each jump, you don't really need a ton of memory on what the tricks actually are. That's not the focus of the game.
Mm-hmm. They call me Two Trick Johnny.
Yeah, so you can just alternate back and forth between two if you have no imagination and want to keep yourself clear. But yeah, so it was surprisingly easy to get right back into. And man, the thought that came to my mind while playing it is this is a game where every inch of it is dripping in risk and reward in a really fun way. Just because it is inherently you're careening down a mountain versus kind of being like a Tony Hawk where you're kind of in a skate park and can kind of set things up a little more deliberately. Every second you have to decide, do I try to get an extra rotation on my current trick before I land? Do I try to hit the ramp immediately in front of me and maybe, not be able to maneuver fast enough to get there? Or do I try to really set up for a huge jump on the one a little further down? Do I try to jam in extra tricks at the cost of speed, meaning that I'll be doing smaller tricks, or do I really kind of zoom past some easy opportunities to launch myself high into the air? It just, it really lends itself to that constant mini decision making on how big you want to go. Do I cash in my combo, or do I try to keep it going for an even larger multiplier, that sort of thing? Really, really cool stuff.
I'm going to ask you to refresh me. Is this the SSX, just plain SSX that came out for the PS3, Xbox 360 in like 2008, 2009?
I think it came out later than that. I hope it hasn't been that long. Jeez, 6 years would be a travesty for me to have missed.
I am really sorry to say this. It's 2012. Sorry. Okay.
2012. Okay. Phew. Made me feel super old, Cole.
Sorry. Sorry about that.
No, yeah. So this is the re-release on then current gen consoles. So
the reboot.
The reboot. Yeah, the reboot. And why they haven't had a second one come out yet, I don't know. I'm angry at them for that. I expect another one sometime soon. But yeah, it's been really refreshing. The runs are never longer than a couple minutes, so it's easy to just kind of jump into. What else can I say? The one thing that's really confusing, it was confusing then, it continues to be confusing now, is why they have characters with different stats. Because there's one character that has more trick stats, and you're always going to choose him if you're doing a tricks run. And there's one character that has the highest speed stats, and you're always going to choose her if you're doing a speed run. And everyone else just kind of falls by the wayside, which really sucks. Because, you want to be able to play the character that you like the visual style of.
Right. It's an extreme sports game. Style is a part of it.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the one piece that just didn't make any sense to me.
Yeah.
I know it has more to do with the main single player campaign where you're trying to do dangerous descents and certain characters have specialties on like ice or, with wingsuits and stuff like that. But, that's not what I'm focusing on this time. So it just feels like a miss.
Yeah.
Wingsuit snowboarding?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
This is a very cartoonish.
Yeah, it's have I mentioned that it is not at all realistic?
Right. In real life, if you do a sick kickflip on your snowboard, you can do that, right? You can do a kickflip on a snowboard.
You can do so much more than a kickflip. Yeah, you can spin it around. You can.
That makes no fucking
that's
sense.
That's not physically possible.
No, better yet, you can do a rotation in one direction, stop, and then just start doing rotations in another direction.
But every time you do that in real life, they don't just play the "It's Tricky" song.
Yeah. Well, that's the other thing. The game has a phenomenal soundtrack. Like, I love every single song on it. The only song you ever hear if you're playing well is Tricky.
Yep. Which, it's a fine song.
Not when it's played over and over
and over. Yeah, I mean, it wears out its welcome.
Like it's the opposite of whatever you call a reward for doing well. Like
a disincentive?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Thank you. It's a disincentive for doing well. Which is kind of funny, you know, if after you hear it enough times. Yeah. But I'm not doing that well yet. It was easy to get back into. It is not that easy to get back into. / I was never that good at it to begin with.
They should make the soundtrack go at a certain speed, so you have to outrun the song.
That could be cool. The thing that I do like about it, it's just really subtle. But when you launch yourself into the air, whatever track is playing will get kind of like a little envelope over it. It'll get kind of murky. Mm-hmm. And then it'll snap back to regular volume when you land, creates this really cool kind of effect of it. You know, the world is slowing down around you as you do this insane thing.
Yeah.
So it's got good use of music in a game. Good game overall. I have a lot of fun memories of those game and they were held up by going back to it.
Nice.
Yeah. That's my one new thing. I really have not been playing much other than that. It's been a busy week.
That is fine. Mm-hmm. That is acceptable. Can I keep us going on the extreme sports tip?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, so I'm going to continue to contribute to this being the PSN free games cast, I suppose. So as we alluded last episode and this episode in the brief, I bought a PS Vita. It's really cool. I'm excited about the backward compatibility stuff. Which is really nice. I like it as a piece of hardware, but I also like it because if I'm going to get free games from PSN, I'm going to have all of the systems where I get free games. God damn it.
Yep.
and so something came out today, I think. Ollie 2.
Yeah, I clicked online to get it. I haven't downloaded it yet.
Yep. You have accumulated it.
Yes. Yeah. I have Roombaed it. I have video game Roombaed it.
Yep. So Ollie, I never played the first one, although I listened to the Comrade about it and they speak very highly of it. Mm-hmm. It is a 2D side scrolling skateboarding game, sounds like a really cool concept and is actually, if it's, you know, if the first one's anything like the second one, it's very technical. It's kind of demanding of the timing for you. Like, it does a lot with the stick. Like, you hold down in order to charge your jump, and then you do like very quick movements with your stick in the air in order to, you know, pop a trick or so. Depending on what is mapped to what, and then you have to tap the X button in order to land it properly, or else you don't get the points. And you know, it is very much like what you described SSX as being like, because you are proceeding forward at kind of a fixed rate. You can speed it up and you can kind of slow it down, but you are going over a fixed course as opposed to, again, the open kind of approach that Tony Hawk kind of has you take. And so it's about kind of identifying the lines, the lines that you can take in these stages in order to maximize your points, meet all of the challenges in a given stage, and not die as you go along.
Because how do you choose different lines in a 2D game?
Like, take advantage of them. So like, if you kind of know, and if you have the course memorized, or if you're able to respond quickly enough, which I can't, so I memorize, you just kind of take advantage of them. So you kind of know, all right, after this rail ends, there's going to be another one coming up here pretty soon. Or, you know, like, if you get on one rhythm, with a certain one, you will not be in a position to jump to get to the next one, or, you know, just stuff like that.
Got it.
It's forcing you to be just like a little bit more strategic with it. But it's definitely the first, you know, game like this outside of Skate where I felt like it's asking me to rise to meet its level. Mm-hmm. Even for the basic stuff that it's asking me to do, like just forcing you to pay attention to when you're going to land in order to tap that button and you know, get a not sloppy landing, makes it into almost kind of like a rhythm game a little bit, because it has the you know, the closer the closer you are to the ground when you tap the button, the more points you get and the better your landing is. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's really cool. I dig the look of it. I like how fast paced it is, but it is a great fit for the Vita, and I'm excited to kind of dip into it. And this kind of seems to fit alongside a bunch of other games that I think are going to be really good in handheld, like Rogue Legacy or SteamWorld Dig, where you just kind of like dip into it and then dip back out of it, kind of like you would with an iPhone game, except you have a good D-pad and you have, or a D-pad at all. And the analog sticks and stuff like that. Like, it's really pretty cool.
Yeah, dip into SteamWorld Dig, not spend like hours upon hours at a time playing it. I didn't do that.
Nice. Yeah. So if there are no questions about Ali Ali, like, I have mostly just been playing Professor Layton versus Phoenix Wright, which has continued to be exactly what you see on the box.
Have they met yet?
Yes, they have met. Okay. It's funny because like the bulk of the game takes place in this fantasy world called Labyrinthia. And
Sorry, Labyrinthine.
Yeah, Labyrinthine, there we go. So Professor Layton is the one who kind of like goes into it after Phoenix Wright is sucked into it. But Phoenix's memories are taken, you know, like he loses memory, him and Maya Fey. They're acting as bakers in this world. except they are the only people who are, you know, like Phoenix is wearing a blue suit when everybody else is in this traditional medieval garb. And Maya is dressed up like a shrine girl. So they're very obviously out of place. It's really funny.
That's funny.
Also, nice. They're still pretending that Phoenix comes from America as opposed to Japan, which is another flavor of funny. So, yeah. Good, man, handheld gaming, you guys.
Yeah, it's a good time for it.
Yeah, it is good time. Good.
Are they still keeping like a good blend of puzzles going, or has it leaned more towards one game style so far?
It's been about 50-50, if I'm being honest. The very minute that I get tired of playing one or the other, it switches to the other one. So that is that has worked out nicely. I tend to like the Phoenix Wright sections more. A, because I'm a bigger fan of Phoenix Wright than a Professor Layton, mostly because everything that you see in the Phoenix Wright sections, you're paying attention to it in order to gather facts for the case. Mm-hmm. Like the actual, you know, reading of the dialogue is the game in those, in that mode. Whereas in Professor Layton, like I want to do a bunch of brain teasers. I want to do these puzzles, but everything that falls between those, yes, it's advancing the story a little bit, but it's advancing it in a very kind of simplistic and kind of like overly verbose kind of way, where Luke, the little sidekick, will say something and then Professor Layton will say yes and then repeat the same thing, and then the little kid will say something and repeat it. You know, it's just, it's a little bit much. And like, when are they gonna get to the puzzles? Like, I want to move the matchsticks around, you guys. So that's a little bit of a bummer. Like, I don't know how much of it has to do with the fact that I'm still kind of getting into the swing of the story, and what they're saying and talking about will eventually get more interesting, a little bit more lively as I go along. But the Phoenix Wright stuff is top notch so far.
Glad to hear it.
Yeah.
I might have asked this last time, but why is it versus? Is Phoenix trying to put like Layton behind bars, or what?
They're on two different sides. So this may or may not be spoilers. The game is about witch trials.
Oh, okay.
And they may or may not be on two different sides of whether or not witches are a plague on this town.
Fair enough.
Yeah. That's my understanding of it anyway. There is no reason for them to be in conflict yet. They have met, but not in a versus capacity. Yeah. Who wants to go next?
I can go. This will probably be fairly short. I've just continued to play Destiny. It continues to be good. I'm level 18 now, and I'm on what I think is the last planet. So,
what planet is it?
Mars.
Okay.
Enigmatic. Fair as always. Enough.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm continuing to like it. The story doesn't exactly seem like it's going anywhere in particular. But, I mean, I'm kind of just, writing what once went wrong and, hoping the next planet is the planet home or something.
You know where home is. You can just go there. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's a... Nothing I've read has given any indication that it's going to get better in terms of story.
Eh.
I mean,
I don't know. I'm holding out. I think it set up a strong starting point to which I could see either the DLCs or probably Destiny 2 being good.
Why are we so okay with saying this sets up a good sequel? In video game stories,
I feel because like I hear video that game all the... stories generally suck.
Yeah, I guess, but I feel like I hear that so often.
I was okay when Mass Effect did it because it was one of the first games to do it. But yeah, I'm typically not okay with it.
Yeah. I know. I think it's honestly, I think part of it is just because video games, particularly large video games, have so many moving parts that it's very difficult to get both good gameplay, interesting premise, and good story. So ideally, they get one or two of those knocked out the first time around and then get the rest of it next time.
Yeah. I think the only time that has really been done where they've taken an unacceptable game with like a little bit of promise and then delivered it on the sequel was Assassin's Creed 1 to 2.
Yeah.
That is the counterexample, but it is so rare. And I think that is kind of offset by something Destiny is very guilty of, which is a publisher coming out and saying, we have a broader plan for this. You know, it's the whole pre-announcing a trilogy kind of effect, mm-hmm. which, yeah. again, Mass Effect really guilty of. But I think that Mass Effect 1 was an engaging enough game, not as good as what Mass Effect 2 would ultimately be, and told a, serviceable enough story that it was, like, acceptable in a way that Assassin's Creed 1, or it sounds like Destiny doesn't.
I don't know. I've had more fun in Destiny than I've had in a very, very, very long time.
I mean, fun...
Yes.
Okay, cool, yes. Fun, there we go. It is not for me to question what fun is.
Yeah. No, I know. I think it's a good game. I know. I like shooting dudes.
Mm-hmm. I'm happy you're having fun with it. I mean, so are you tempted to kind of like dip into alts?
Into which?
Alts, like, to create another character in a different class. I would be tempted if there were three of them just to make three characters and level them equally. But
right, yeah. I know right now I've got the character that I think is probably probably most represents the playstyle I want. I'm playing as the Titan, which is kind of the heavy armor punch all the things class. I tried the hunter some, and it's a lot of it has its moments, it has some nice abilities, but it really focuses on headshots, which I just I don't know. That's
I mean, if you're
really
gonna get out there, if you're gonna audition for parts, you gotta have some good headshots, right?
Right, exactly.
It's so, your destiny to be a good actress or actor.
You're going
to
be a star, kid.
Not sure what just happened.
Sorry.
Cole was doing his Japanese businessman impression.
Continue, David.
Yeah, so I know, like, the classes are enough different that it's... I could see myself doing it, but not so much different that I feel like I must, if that makes sense.
Uh-huh.
But I also like, at least 2 out of 3 races.
You so, like 2 out of 3 what, I'm sorry?
Of the races you can play as. Both the robot people and the human people are pretty cool. The emo kid people are a little unusual.
I mean, are they like organic aliens or?
They're people who have no choice but to wear lipstick and goth makeup, apparently. Like, imagine if an entire race of people looked like the Crow.
Okay. Very, very careless about the about the props in their movie.
That horse is as dead as Brandon Lee.
Yeah. I kind of keep returning to that well, don't I? Yeah.
No, I kind of wonder what they were intending to go for with it, because with that race, because I've never seen any of them that don't just look ridiculous.
I mean, do they have an origin story? Like
their plot line is that when the darkness came and everything went to hell, a whole bunch, you know, everyone that had access to spaceships fled Earth, and they're basically the descendants of the people that fled Earth, and it's implied, and maybe where the story's going, that, you know, something happened and now they're vaguely changed and supernaturally, and I don't know.
Yeah. So it's basically the Dragon Riders of Pern.
What?
So it's basically the Dragon Riders of Pern.
Yeah, it's, yeah, I'm not quite sure where they're going with them. Uh-huh. So it's interesting.
Well, I mean, by looking at the information that I see in front of me, which is definitely not Wikipedia, races are pretty much entirely cosmetic at this point.
Oh yeah, and 100% cosmetic.
Okay.
But no, I particularly like the handling of the robots in it. I like the fact that the robots are generally treated as just straight up people, as opposed to like really doubling down on like, oh, every other episode is going to be, you know, wondering, can I really feel love?
That's an important question.
What?
That's an important question.
True, but yeah, you know what I mean. Like, they don't do the whole, like, oh, they're robots, therefore they don't have emotions, or can I understand these, in, you know, illogical Earthman thoughts.
Right, right.
And I really like one of the vendors is just this, you know, robot that's, you know, hundreds of years old, and so, you know, effectively has like robot PTSD from just having, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years of memory that I can't quite keep straight, and there's just some interesting angles.
Yeah, like that sounds more interesting to me than what the usual Bungie story is, which is let's name stuff after archetypes. Like,
right? I mean, that's still definitely a thing,
right?
I don't know. There's a lot. This is again like the thing that everyone says about the game, but there's a lot of interesting world there. They just haven't quite told a particularly interesting story in it yet.
Mm. The sequel will be great, I'm sure.
So, huh.
Is that all, David?
Yeah, that's it.
Cool. Ben, how about you?
All right. I got one little ditty. I got I started playing XCOM again from...
Yay!
Yeah, from Dennis talking about it and playing the board game and whatnot.
I'll do my banking, I guess.
So
Cole, there's literally a role for you in the board game where you can do banking. So,
all right, sweet. Yeah. Finally, it's Cole's time to shine. I'll show all of you.
XCOM controller.
XComtroller? He did a really bad job. We had to take away his license. He ran this place into the ground. We're it'll take years to recover. Go ahead, Ben.
Yeah, so I started an Iron Man run of it, so you cannot save in that mode, just because I wanted to see. Just normal. Just okay. Normal. Nothing insane.
Aside from doing the Iron Man run.
Well, that I mean, that's was to try and see how hard that would be. Because, yeah. But it actually hasn't been that bad, though. I've had two people die, and I am played it for maybe about 8 to 10 hours or so. So I think the trick is I haven't done any of the missions that I'm supposed to do yet. I've just spent all my time like doing the whatever surprise missions there are and then just like developing my base. So right now I'm at I need to capture a live alien and interrogate it. And which is like a super early mission, but I've already got satellites over like all but 3 or 4 of the countries. So I'm kind of doing things out of order than how I did my first playthrough. But so far it's been good. I imagine that my people are going to start dying pretty soon, but I'm just going to get some Shiv robots to replace them and we will be fine. So, yeah. Are there any questions about it? Dennis,
are you naming your soldiers at all?
No.
Can't get attached.
Vampire is my sniper, though. That's my sniper.
Good name. It's a good name.
I mean, is that
like, I didn't make it.
Eventually, do they just start automatically generating those for you?
Yeah.
They automatically pick nicknames.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which I feel like it's a missed opportunity because no matter what you name your soldier, it will randomly assign them a nickname, and I don't know if you can edit the nickname.
I like the nicknames because I still remember Prophet was my support from the first time I played.
Oh yeah, my original heavy from the first time I ever played the game was Arcade. You remember those things, but there's kind of a finite pool of those nicknames, and whereas there's kind of just a ton of regular names, but they could have started working in the nicknames to the dialogue or to the voice work. Yeah. And I think that would have been cool. Like that would have been achievable. The massive amount of regular names, I don't think would have been as achievable. But
yeah, go ahead.
Unless everyone's going to talk like Stephen Hawking.
Yeah, I mean, if it's limited, they can probably throw it in. Like they did that with Fight Night. Actually, you can select like a name for your guy that is not so they can say, okay, there are maybe like 20 of these, so like he can be Bruiser or the Angel of Death or whatever, and they can just record that in such a way that they can splice it in.
Yeah, great punch by the Bruiser.
so Ben, let me ask you this. So you're playing Enemy Within, right?
Yes.
So I have new access to Meld and to either Cybernetics and Psionics. I chose Cybernetics. Did I make the right choice?
You can do both.
Right, but it's kind of my horse early on.
I mean, they have different advantages and disadvantages.
Which one do you prefer?
I think one of the best things to do is get your sniper the eye implants and the leg implants from the Thin Man that makes them jump any height, because they can immediately get the height on any other enemy and like destroy them with all if you spec them right. So if like if they have the one where they can see anybody that's within their eyesight, that anyone in their squad can see. Mm-hmm. And if they have, I think the plus 10 aim, plus 10 critical chance if they're at a higher height than the other person. Like if you get all those kind of level ups to line up like that, then those people do a lot of damage.
You do really wind up building the game around snipers.
Yeah, they can do the most damage for sure in a single double tap.
Have you ever tried to run just an alt sniper team? Is that viable?
You could try, I guess.
It'd be really slow. You can only move like half of them at a time.
You wouldn't get a lot of meld early on.
No.
You'd be kind of hunkered down in a corner. But yeah, you could do it.
Well, and the mission that I'm currently playing, you have to get to the end of a train by a certain number of turns, and it's like you have to move your ass if you want to get there in time.
So if you have a sniper that has that perk where they can see anybody that any of your other squad mates can see, you just park them at the back of the train, have them run to the front, and then they can pick people off as they spawn.
Yep, that's what I've been trying to do, but not super duper succeeding at.
Yeah. But yeah, It's what difficulty are you playing on right now?
Classic.
Oh Lord.
So I'm getting brutalized pretty well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, is it once you get all of the satellites up, it's then impossible to lose funding, correct?
I don't know. Is that true, Dennis? Will a country leave if they have a satellite?
Oh gosh. I don't think that's the case.
Okay. See, I thought it was a country who had a satellite could never get a random random encounter.
Right, but that doesn't mean that their panic can't go up.
Okay.
Because you won't get a random encounter. I'm not sure if that eliminates terror missions as well as abduction missions. If another country within your continent area goes up in panic, that might affect their panic as well.
Yeah, because I don't know what you could do to stop it then, you know, like if you had like three abductions or whatever, yeah. You know what I mean?
The reason I pause that is the only fail condition of the game is if X number of or I think it's
countries
like eight,
leave.
Yeah, if yeah. eight countries leave. So I have to imagine that there's not just a, hey, I can get these satellites up and never have to worry about losing.
Well, yeah, but there's a win condition too. And so you have to eventually get that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Huh.
I don't know.
Glad to hear you're playing it again. It's we'll have to compare notes at some point.
Yeah, man. It's a fun game. So, yeah. So we'll see. Hopefully, I want to try and beat it with an Iron Man. But, yeah, we'll see.
If you asked me 2 years ago, what is the game we're going to talk about most on this show? Like, okay, so that's going to sound shitty. Like, it's guys, why do you keep going on? It's actually like a genuine observation.
Yeah.
Like, there's
the
probably
would be Dark Souls though.
But earlier, like at least in this iteration of the show, I shunted that off right quick. Which I'm not telling you guys go start an XCOM cast unless you want to. You know, like I'll help you if you want. Like it's cool.
Call
that
it Comcast.
Yeah. Yep. free and clear. No cease and desist.
We have to do it.
Yeah, no, so I'm not saying like, hey, don't do this, you know. I'm kind of quiet because I don't really have anything to add because I haven't played it, but like it's just that we've gotten so much mileage out of this game.
I feel the same way. Yeah.
Huh. Yeah, I don't know, like there's a case to be made for this being the most covered game on the show, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, we certainly come back around to it frequently. I know we talked a while back about doing a bonus level on it. I feel like that would allow us to kind of put it to bed. But yeah,
That would require, you know, us to the rest of us to then actually try to beat it.
Yeah. See, that's the thing. Like I just got ahead on assignment play for, you know, in advance of Bloodborne. Like I don't need to add any more on top of that. Like I just need
Bloodborne
to like,
looks so cool.
I know. Right. I just need to breathe free and clear for like a fucking second.
No. Well, we do have to bring in, Adrian, that we interviewed was a big fan of XCOM games. Oh, yeah. He said he'd come back on for that. And then we'll try to get someone from the developers and we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. Yeah. So that is not me trying to quash any discussion of this game. I apologize if that's how it's come across, but I was more marveling at this game being the phenomenon that it is.
It lends itself to that really well. So yeah.
I still can't decide which is better between it and Civilization though. I mean, I think that they're both solid games, so.
Hey, they're both Firaxis.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. Hmm. Is that all?
Yep. Man. That's it.
Guys, I don't want to like peel back the curtain or anything, but we are finishing before midnight. Yeah. Cool. So let's button it up.
Let's.
The credit. Thank you everybody for listening to this, the 96th episode of The Level. We are in the March to 100. We're still taking any thoughts that people might have on, you know, things we can do for the 100th episode. I'm still in the process of getting stuff over onto SoundCloud. So that is going to be something that when I pull the switch, you're going to see a bunch of episodes of the show in your feed again. I'm very sorry about that. There's nothing I can do. to prevent that. But it will eventually be for the better. We can all, you know, grow past it and heal. Other than that, there's the usual stuff, you know, tell your friends. If you have any buddies who like video games and podcasts, say, hey, we've got a show about things you love. You know, the usual iTunes ratings and reviews, and Facebook, facebook.com/TheLevelPodcast. Am I missing anything, guys?
Don't think so.
Cool. So until next time, I've been Cole Ross at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I have been Dennis Furia at DFuria on Twitter.
I've been David Moneysmith at Moneysmith777 on Twitter.
And I've been Ben Merkel at Merkelizer on Twitter.
Yeah. And until next time, Swoopcast Engage. I'm sorry, I have the Wikipedia page open for Betinkaitos, and one word stuck out to me: taint clouds.
Stuff of Dolly nightmares.
a poisonous layer of gas at the bottom of the sky. So cool, guys. Good on your lore. Good on your world building. sorry, I'm going to close that.